Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 97 for February 27th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Anger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp.
And I'm Mike Calvo from the road to CSUN.
Oh boy.
So what part of the road are you in at this particular moment or on, whatever the proper way to say that is, Mike?
Well, as we're recording this, it is Friday, and I am in the wonderful city of San Jose. Today, we'll be visiting our friends at Yahoo, Yahoo Access. For those of you that are not aware, and if you're not aware, what rock have you been under? We are taking a road to CSUN with Microsoft. Microsoft is on a road trip basically promoting accessibility and social networking. So what we decided to do is we wanted to be micro stalkers of the Microsofters. So we got a car, we labeled it up with a bunch of Serotalk and Serotech type stuff and took it to the road. We started in Redmond at the Microsoft campus on Monday, the 20th of February, and we will be cruising into San Diego right around Tuesday or so to meet up with you and Joe, Ricky.
That's right.
You know, going to hang out there and, you know, raise a ruckus, you know, just have some great old CSUN love and fun times. But this has been a great road trip. It really has. Those of you that have been following along on the road number 2 CSUN.com website, which is Serotalk's hub, basically, to what's going on. You can follow Microsoft there. You can follow us on Twitter. You can look at the videos that have been shot from the road. We've really had a great time, guys. And Roger and I, with the exception of one minor traffic infraction, which, as Roger said, it wouldn't be a road trip without a, you know, at least one speeding ticket. So everything else has been great. I'm sitting here in a Homestead Suites, which is a really nice place in San Jose, just nice and quiet. Got the windows open, enjoying the just the breeze coming through the area here. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place. Love California, and met some great people coming through, as you can read about on our blogs and various posts.
And we want to mention that the power of social networking is full on here, because we've got, when we do the live chats with Mike on the road, as we will with other events for Serotalk, we've got a live chat open on Accessible Event. So we're talking to people in text while we're talking to them live from SAMNet Tech Chat. We actually have the tech chat room, so people within SAMNet can actually come on and ask us questions live. We look at Twitter. We talk about top news stories and stuff. So when we have these events online, it's a culmination of a lot of social networking tools and what we have available and the technologies that we can do, not only just as blind people, but people in general that we can communicate with in real time. Mike is actually doing that. He's talking to us off of his network card, off his MacBook Air, through via satellite and many other ways of being able to get the signal into us while we're recording. So we actually have a bunch of technology at work here.
And Microsoft is doing something similar. They're posting videos from the road, and they're posting updates daily, as is Mike, actually. Check out the Serotalk blog to read his daily thoughts on the road to CSUN.
You know, the only thing that, if there's one complaint, I guess, I have about this trip is I really thought that we were better off in this country when it comes to connectivity, just kind of wireless connectivity. And I am very sorry to say that is just not true necessarily. We have a large representation within the group, within both Microsoft and Serotalk. We're carrying from Verizon, which is claimed to be, quote, the best, which is what I'm using. AT&T, which is what Dan's using. I have my iPhone on Sprint, which I'm using as a mobile hotspot from time to time. And all of them, be they collectively or individually, just break up. Not to mention the fact that hotel intranet is pretty lousy for the most part. I mean, so I just this is something that is really sad to me, because we are not a developing country. And I understand that developing countries have less investment in infrastructure than the United States does. So we need to kind of stagger our release of technology. We've got a lot more legislation, a lot more of that kind of thing from the FCC that we have to go through to increase our footprint. But come on, guys. I mean, let's get at least a 64 to 128 K, you know, signal that's steady. We're not getting that, and it's just really sad, considering that California is probably one of the most brilliant states in the union here. But besides that, we've had a great time, and if you've missed it, and if you haven't paid attention to my Twitter feed, which you can follow me on Twitter just at Mike Calvo, all one word, MikeCalvo, you know, you missed us yesterday. Roger and I were driving down the road. We were rapping, literally rapping. Oh, yeah. Type of, you know, just
now,
chilling.
See, that's
and
the kind of thing you need to broadcast on the live event. That's what people.
Never. No. Actually, on the live event, it was there, but we will not let Patrick or Derek near it with a recording device. No.
Actually, we played another game of Name That Tune with chat room yesterday. So as Mike would go to Pandora. It was who could name that tune in about seven notes. So that was what we did last night in chat.
And yesterday we were playing with the burger, that thing about the burger, a large orange drink.
Oh, yeah. Fast food from YouTube.
Dude, it was hilarious. Yeah, I mean, we couldn't stop laughing. It was just hilarious. So if you are into that kind of ridiculous satirish type of thing that we do, if you're bored to tears at home and just want to take a trip through our lives and see what the heck we're doing so we can further bore you to tears. No, actually, it was actually kind of fun. And if you can deal with some of the flakiness of the internet connection and all of that, we invite you to follow us along. I'm going to be traveling all the way through the weekend. By the time you hear this, though, I will probably already be at CSUN. And the road trip, as it is, will be over. But it has truly been a blast. And I really appreciate the support of the entire community. And first and foremost, of course, of the wonderful SteroTalk staff. And thank you, Microsoft, for allowing us to stalk you and to follow us. Please do look at the show notes. Follow Microsoft on Twitter. Visit their accessibility blog. And do check out those videos. Use them to inform people just what accessibility means to us as a community, what social networking means to us as a community, and how it's going to help us break down those walls of inaccessibility and those walls of ignorance. When people start to know who you are in your personal life, you know what? They're going to start to look at you as, I hate to use the word normal, but as a peer, as opposed to that blind guy or gal that I know. And that's important for us to be able to look at one another as peers and be able to look at each other as equals. And I think that social networking really does help do that. So do your part.
Well, Mike, I know you've got some miles ahead of you today, so I'd like to thank you for joining us. And we look forward to hearing the latest either live chat or blog entry from you soon.
Thanks for having me on the podcast, guys. Have a great one.
You too.
He's off to get a large orange drink. Thanks for stopping by.
Onion rings.
And as we mentioned, Joe and I will be in San Diego beginning on the 28th. I will be doing a presentation on Accessible Event at 9:20 a.m. on the 29th. And Joe and I will be wandering around the exhibit halls, snagging victims to be interviewed. And, of course, that coverage will appear later on SPN Radio once it's all uploaded and cleaned up and such. So you can look forward to CSUN coverage in the near future.
And then just a few short weeks after that, you'll be able to get the downloadable archive. This week, we actually had the downloadable archive for ATIA go up. Jamie and I put together three specials that has all of the coverage that we had done from CSUN 2012.
Wrong. ATIA 2012, not CSUN. Come on, man, it hasn't started yet.
We'll do the same thing for CSUN for those of you who don't necessarily listen to our live stream in the background or who just really want to have your information on demand. That's part of the great part of the internet is that you can get to the information you want when you want it.
And if you don't care about CSUN coverage, we'll still have something to keep you entertained. That Android show, as well as Triple Click Home, will soon have new episodes posted.
That Android show is actually going to have an interview with Nolan Darlick from Spiel and actually a couple of app reviews, so you definitely want to check that out.
In this week's AT News, Neil Ewers has released a podcast of the Olympus LS100. Now, he posted it up on Dropbox, and when I tried to download it from there, I got an error. Dropbox doesn't like it if a bunch of people hit the site and try to download something all at the same time. There is a QAudio, however, that we'll post a link to.
It's on Blind Cool Tech now, too.
Very good. Thank you. Excellent. So there are ways to get this interview or this podcast. I have not had a chance to listen to it. I'm actually going to be out of town a bit this weekend. And one of the things I'm putting on my portable player is going to be Neil Ewers' podcast. So looking forward to that. Also, there are some exciting developments from Sendero. And if you listened to our ATIA interviews, you will know that Derek Lane visited with Mike May about this very thing. And they discussed it at some length, actually. Mike couldn't talk a lot about it, but they are working on a fully accessible GPS app for iOS, certainly. And they're having a couple of noon sessions at CSUN Thursday and Friday to kind of get some user feedback on, you know, what would you really want to see in a GPS device for the blind? What's missing from the mainstream products? What would you like to see?
I'll be catching up with these guys at CSUN, and they may be able to talk a little more in depth about what's going on with the iPhone app. Relatedly, Blind Bargains posted an article or sort of an Ask the Reader post, and the subject is, how much would you be willing to pay for a truly accessible GPS app for your phone? And there are already several comments. It looks like people are kind of hovering around the $100 mark. Some people would go as high as $200. But then there are those who really don't want to pay any more than $20 for an app. And you can't do that for any full-featured GPS app in the mainstream. So I don't think that it's going to be as inexpensive as $20, but you can throw in your opinion on this Blind Bargains article. We'll have a link to it in the show notes.
The $100 thing actually is surprising because for mobile accessibility, which was a suite of apps for Android, people, you know, were like $99, you know, so that's, it's really interesting that that seems to be kind of the place where some people would purchase on headroom on pricing. You know, we have gotten to a kind of a 99-cent app society, and there are articles out there by app developers that talk about how that has hurt app development and why you don't necessarily see suites of apps for iPhone and iPad because people are used to purchasing just a series of apps to do the one thing that they want to do out of the suite. So maybe they turn around and do what mobile accessibility did by breaking out the browser out of mobile accessibility. And that's kind of what Sendero's done with the Lookaround app, don't you guys think?
Yeah.
They have posted the Lookaround app, and they even got some flack for charging $5 for that, which I didn't agree with. Yes, there are some free apps on the store that do similar things like Around Me and that kind of thing. But I think people have to remember that apps don't appear under cabbage leaves. You know, people have
to develop
them. Code
Monkey, Need Fritos, and Mountain Dew.
That's right. You got to keep your developers supplied with Fritos and Tab and Mountain Dew. So they have to make money. And whether that's done through advertising within the app itself or charging a reasonable price to recoup some of those development costs, that's just kind of the way of the world.
Well, and I think if you go back to that interview that Derek did, Mike May is really interested in a monthly subscription model. And that's one of the things he mentioned. So it could be that we could kind of defray some of the cost of that.
That's a whole nother incredible thing, because then you get into the App Store model of, wow.
Well, however it goes, they're going to have to give Apple a cut of the, you know, a cut of the revenue. And AT&T does this subscription-based model, so there is kind of a precedent for doing that for a GPS app. And I think there are a couple of other companies who do subscription-based GPS as well. So it's not a new idea necessarily. Right. Now, whether it will work well for Sendero and consumers, I think remains to be seen.
Well, and then you come back to the mainstream portion of it. Code Factory has talked publicly about doing a version of their GPS programs and whether there's a market for that when on the Android platform there's already, as we've said on this podcast, Ricky and I last year, we actually did dueling GPSs. And I was using just the stock Android GPS, you know, Google Maps thing. And Ricky, you were using, what was it, Navicon at the time last year?
No, I was using TomTom, and both of them worked reasonably well. Joe's won, by the way. But here's my question about this. Mainstream GPS apps don't necessarily, now correct me if I'm wrong, and this is in the Google version of this, I don't think that you're able to easily explore a route before you take it. And I also don't think that you're able to have POIs announced as you pass them. So if you're in pedestrian mode, you could be alerted that you're walking by a Starbucks. And those are things that the blindness-specific GPS solutions have. And so for me, I believe that it's a matter of what you want out of a GPS solution. If you don't care about those things, then you can get by with something like Navigon or TomTom, both of which at one time or another, by the way, have updated such that they are inaccessible. So that's always kind of a concern when you're looking at mainstream products. And it's one that I hope will go away. But again, we've actually seen that this does happen. You've paid good money and suddenly you can't use your app.
Well, and is it a natural evolution of the ecosystem? You know, we've talked about products in the mainstream. This is different than, say, buying a blindness-specific note taker. You're actually purchasing an app that's been more tailored to an experience. And that's no different than people running, say, Cyanogen Mod or jailbreaking their iPhone. So, you know, that's also the other part of some people look at this as a stigma, as in every mainstream app should be accessible to me. And I get you on that. But at the same time, if someone is making an app that's more tailored to the experience, and that falls into the comments that you just made, and I could see that. And again, that costs money. It shouldn't cost more money than what other apps of considerable value are. So, I mean, I don't think we should pay a Apple tax, nor should we pay a blindness tax. But, you know, that,
it does cost money regardless. And the one thing I wanted to point out is that we have used the phrase blind ghetto here before. And, you know, some people are not too fond of this phrase and some people really sort of latch on to it. But I think there's a difference between blind ghetto, meaning that you are within a walled garden of sorts that keeps people out and keeps you in. And a blindness specific app is different than that because it may be designed and tailored toward a particular experience, but it isn't restrictive. You know, anybody could use this app. There are features that are useful to everyone. It just happens to be designed with a blind person and a blind person's specific needs in mind to enhance a, you know, maybe to enhance a mainstream experience.
Yeah, perfect examples would be Stem Stumper that has, you know, a sonar mode. They don't call it blindness specific, but certainly they designed it with the ability to teach others what it's like to do things non-visually, as well as being very voiceover friendly. And, you know, King's Corner, there's another one where sighted people can play that game just as well as those of us using voiceover. It's actually how I play the game. So I agree with you. It's not a quote unquote platform that I am stuck in and I have to go through this ecosystem to totally get. I'm actually in the same ecosystem with everybody else within Apple. Unless I jailbreak.
And honestly, what I hope for Sendero is that it is designed to go outside the blindness market. These features would probably be very useful to a sighted pedestrian or a sighted driver as well.
Well, while we're on the subject of GPS, we don't want to leave out Ariadne. Version 2.0 is on the store, and there's a podcast about that app as well. So definitely check that out if you use that app or if you're interested in it at all. Well, Georgia Tech is working on an app for the iPhone. This headline says Georgia Tech's Braille Touch is a Braille writer for iPhone. It's kind of one of those six key entry things. This is looks like it's a little different than maybe some of the other things that we've talked about on the podcast. They're going to add space and backspace capabilities. Now, I'm not sure what all you can do with this. I mean, are you going to be able to text with it? You know, how is it going to interface with the rest of the device?
It's a good question. And I think the intention is that, yes, you would do text entry, whether it be in notes or whether you're texting and that kind of thing. It attempts to mimic the Braille keyboard in a way that none of the other Braille entry apps have done yet. And I kind of like this idea because it seems more familiar than learning a different way to input Braille. And that's not to knock the existing apps which do that. In any case, they're looking at using this for texting and note entry and the like. And what I found interesting in the article was that they were talking about how a sighted person could learn to use Braille and then be able to use this text entry capability without having to look at their phones. So I thought it was kind of interesting that it was targeted to everyone.
That is very, very. And I was actually speaking with someone who is studying to be a low vision teacher yesterday. And the more she was talking about it, because she is just now starting to learn Braille and she is fully sighted. And as I was talking to her, because my first thought when I saw this article was, that's not something I would really be interested in. And the more that we talked, I kind of began to change my thinking a little bit. And I'm kind of like you, Ricky. I actually am a little bit intrigued with this. And she mentioned the fact that a sighted person could ride down the road. So this is a person who, to the best of my knowledge, doesn't spend all of her days looking at news stories on Twitter like we do around here. But yes, she was still aware of this development. So I found that pretty interesting.
And speaking of Twitter, someone really pointed out the other day, why not go into the iOS store and just type in Braille into a search?
Yeah.
You will be just amazed at the number of apps that have really grown up in the last 6 months.
I haven't had a chance to actually play with the updated app, but I'm seeing on Twitter that the updated version of the Twitter app for iPhone has seen some real accessibility improvements.
Yeah, I use Tweetlist, but I also have the native Twitter app on my phone, so I'll definitely be taking a look at that.
How about some more ringtones? Man,
goody.
Yeah.
This one, this is Pete Bosley. This is for you. Beatles ringtones come to the
Yellow
App
Submarine
Store.
On Pete's
so
phone.
At last, you can get Yellow Submarine on your phone, whether you get the song or not. These ringtones are going to be selling for $1.29, and Apple has taken a collection of the most popular Beatles songs. So if you're looking for something that's a little less popular, a B-side, that kind of thing, you might not see a ringtone for that here. But again, you can get Yellow Submarine, and that's really all that matters.
Yes, definitely. Well, continuing our discussion of Apple, Apple's latest sandboxing deadline has been delayed, and it looks like it's going to be moved to June the 1st for developers. It was originally November of last year, then March 1st of this year. So it really sounds like, this article goes into quite a bit of detail about how there are some increased entitlements, such as being able to access files, the camera, FireWire ports for other devices, that sort of thing. It looks like Apple is really listening to some developer concerns and is allowing some time to kind of explore this a little more in depth, perhaps.
I feel like Apple had a theory. Sandboxing looks good on paper. We've done this on iOS. We want to bring this to the desktop. And as they attempted to do that, there were all sorts of real-world scenarios that kept popping up with developers and things that were pointed out to Apple. And they think, we should probably change the way this works and that works. So sandboxing is something that appears to still really be in the development stages, they have a lot to work out. And the article mentions, and this may very well be true, Gatekeeper coming in Mountain Lion may actually address some of the security issues that Apple was so concerned about. And so it may be, and this is pure speculation, it may be that we don't see sandboxing, at least in its current iteration, on the desktop. Gatekeeper may solve some of this, and there may be a heavily modified version of what we currently see for sandboxing going forward.
And that's very typical of Apple, because they usually come out and say something and then get public feedback and then go, wait a minute, that isn't what we meant. We actually meant this. Forget what we said a minute ago. Pay no attention to the reality distortion field. But it is very common for them to take developer feedback and alter their original plans. This has happened on other things that we've talked about on the podcast before. And I think the same will also happen with Gatekeeper. I think Gatekeeper was an idea, and I think they'll get a lot more feedback from people. I think the conversation about Gatekeeper on this new Triple Click Home by Pete and the gang is very interesting. And you and I, Ricky, have had our conversations about Gatekeeper. But
yes,
Pete truly has some real insightful stuff, you know, looking at it from a security professional's, eye. And I think it's worth the conversation because, you know, Apple is approachable on accessibility, on their apps, and things like that. So they do listen to their developers, and that's kind of good because, like we said, those iDevices, pretty popular, as we mentioned last week. I don't think anybody will stop buying them anytime soon.
Also pretty popular is Microsoft Office, and people keep wondering if it's going to come to the iPad. Microsoft says, no, we're not going to do that, but we have an article here that speculates they probably will, and it makes perfect sense for them to do this because, you know, they're not really in danger from iWork. That's just not a big competitor at this point, but Google Docs is, and you see Google Docs on every platform, Android, iOS, desktop. Microsoft needs to be there too. So I think it's pretty likely that, yes, we will be seeing actual Microsoft Office on the iPad, not just third-party apps that can read and write Office documents.
And, you know, people have to understand, Microsoft and Google traditionally are software companies. Apple's a hardware company. So it's not uncommon for Microsoft and Google to be on as many platforms as they possibly can get at. And I've seen people go like, you know, oh, no, Microsoft. Remember, Apple guys, Microsoft gave Apple $150 million as stated in the Steve Jobs book, and that's what kept Apple around. But they did it also because Microsoft and Apple have a long-time partnership. Steve and Bill were friends also from the book. And it's important to know that the most popular selling app on Mac is Microsoft Office, so it makes a lot of sense to be on an iPad.
Speaking of iPads, how about a smaller one? Apparently still in testing stages, says a research firm. And if it's released probably sometime around Christmas, maybe a little before, maybe a little after, who knows? Certainly will not be felt in 2012, but if that happens, we'll see the impact of that in 2013.
A lot of people have been kind of saying no way to this speculation because Steve Jobs mentioned that Apple was not interested in pursuing this. But this could really be a timing thing because at the time he said it, it didn't make sense to have a smaller iPad. But now you have the Kindle Fire, which is much smaller than the iPad, and it is definitely selling, not to the degree that the iPad is, but it's pretty popular. And so, you know, I honestly don't know how much of that has to do with the size of the device. People aren't going to buy Kindle Fires just because, oh, look, it's this particular screen size. I think there's a little more to it than that. But it may be that there is a consumer interest in a smaller device. And so Apple may very well be looking at doing this.
Tinfoil hats, guys. Okay, you ready? Put them on. Here we go.
Uh-oh.
Got it. Yeah.
All right. How do you get people to buy a second iPad? How did you get people to buy a second generation iPod? How did you get people to buy the next MacBook? Different sizes, different flavors. I mean, why continuously keep selling the same box over and over again? Yeah, you're improving it, but maybe you don't need a 10-inch iPad in your car. A 7-inch will do just fine because there are Garmins out there that are 7-inch. And
so you think that there are going to be 5 iPad households or whatever where people have the smaller one and the bigger one and
I'm just kicking it down the line
to
the kids.
The bad thing is you're probably right.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. And that's why I don't discount these ideas because Apple has done multi-flavors. I mean, how did we go from the wheel to the touch? You know, it just makes a lot of sense for them to have different form factors. And it's still within the kind of philosophy of Apple of keeping it simple and keeping different models. But, you know, at one point we had, what was it, 3 different versions because you had the button with no buttons, the iPod mini, oh, good grief, I can't remember
all my iPods.
You had the Nano and the Shuffle.
And
yeah, that's it, the Shuffle. I couldn't think of the Shuffle name.
Right. And then you had the Classic.
So this has been done before. It just seems like within their wheelhouse that they would do something like this.
It does. And again, I've got friends that are not technology geeks at all that own iPads. And those aren't exactly cheap, you know?
No.
That isn't the cheapest device you can purchase. But I'm seeing more and more friends that, and my wife is clamoring for an iPad as well. I'd kind of like to have one. So maybe we'll be a 2 iPad household one of these days. Who knows?
Yeah, you kind of have to. It does become who had the iPad last, you know. And they're easy, you know. They like fit in a manila envelope. No, wait, that's the Air. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right. No. But actually, you know, they're easy to lose.
Tranquility.
Yes, exactly.
Peace and harmony in the family. Yeah, just get another iPad. Well, this next rumor, I actually kind of believe. I think this may actually be true. And this is my tinfoil hat still being worn here. iPhone 5 rumored for autumn, not summer. And the article points out several things. It would make sense to wait because, for one thing, iPhone 4S really has not been out very long. It was been out since June.
October.
And still selling like crazy. iPad 3 is just about to come out. So that would give the iPad 3 some breathing room. And it might kind of make sense then to just change the yearly release schedule for the iPhone from the summer to autumn. So thoughts, guys?
My first thought on reading this was, oh no, Jamie's going to have to wait a lot longer for his iPhone upgrade. And I was wondering.
No, actually, Jamie will go ahead and get a 4S if that happens.
Aha. Yeah, he's not waiting till autumn.
Nope.
So there we have it, the answer.
That's right.
So I suspect that you're going to be looking forward to seeing how this rumor plays out. I agree. I think it's very possible that we'll see an autumn release just as a matter of timing. If you have too many things for consumers to pay attention to, there are too many choices and they may just decide not really to buy any of them. So you want your devices spread out a little bit where the buzz can die down a bit on one and then we go, here you go. Here's something new and shiny, and everybody looks and wants to go get that too.
And our final iPhone story, iPhone and Android apps now required to have privacy policies. It was kind of one of those, well, yeah, maybe they should have done that a while ago, you know? users actually get to agree to have their data shared now.
That's right. And they do say that the privacy policy has to be easily accessible from within the app, whether you click on a link to go to a website or whether it's actually there's a big privacy policy button that you can pretend that you've read all 10 pages and then get really up in arms. How dare you share my contact info? We said we would. You clicked agree.
Coming up after the break, this week's mailbag and cows that can text their owners when they're in the mood.
Aha.
Right here on the Serotalk podcast.
My name is Meera Batra. I have been in this country 32 years, and this is how I live united. America has always been the land of promise, and in my community, many families have come for a better life. Coming from another culture myself, I know the desire to become part of a community, to feel at home, and to gain the tools for our children and families to succeed. So I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to look beyond their histories and to see what opportunities are available. We help them get involved with their kids' schools, network within the community, and when we do, we unite them. We make the community stronger. What I do is something I wish someone had done for me, and I am so grateful I am able to. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunities and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Freedom of speech.
For all speech synthesizers.
This is the Serotalk Podcast Network.
The Serotalk Podcast Network.
We have a lot of mail this week.
Yes, be careful. That mailbag is heavy.
And we really appreciate that. You can certainly write us resources@serotalk.com. You can leave an iReport. You can call 866-997-2522. And those are just a couple ways you can get a hold of us, or three, actually. And you can certainly go over to our blog, our show notes page at serotalk.com, and leave comments. We are going to include those in our mailbag segment from now on. So please be sure and leave comments. We would really appreciate that. So let's start out with an email from Paul Stebbins, who asks what recording software we use when we do these podcasts. Well, gosh, Paul, that could be a number of things. That could be Studio Recorder. It could be Reaper, which it very often is. It could be Skype occasionally. It could be Skype occasionally. So that's not an easy answer. There's a lot of different technology that we use to make this stuff happen.
And when we convert files, we could use Audacity and some other freewares that are out there.
He also asks if the iBlink radio app is available on the desktop as well as iPhone and Android. The short answer is no. The long answer is yes, and here's how. If you are a SAMNet subscriber, which it appears that Paul is, you're getting access to some of the same material that we find on iBlink radio. It's just organized a bit differently, but you still have community radio listing things like ACB Radio, 2020 The Blink, Mojo Radio, those sorts of stations that are owned and operated by blind folks. And you can also see the radio reading services on SAMNet. So if you're looking for a way to access iBlink Radio content from your desktop, don't walk, run to get yourself a SAMNet subscription, and you'll be all set.
Maxon wonders how well the Aftershock's wraparound headphones will work with various screen reader configurations. Mike and Buddy really talk about that quite a bit, and as much as they can, I think, as much as what they've used. So I would say pretty well. That would be my short answer. I guess the other answer would be you may just have to kind of try it and find out. But
these are pretty standard in that you can plug them into anything that has a jack that will accept them. And beyond that, you don't have to worry about how the screen reader routes sound to them and all that stuff, because they don't have a separate sound card device or any of that. You're just looking at a standard pair of headphones that happen to have bone conduction.
Well, Mike Arrigo is disappointed that Accessible Event was rejected from the Apple App Store. And he's excited about the Windows 8 accessibility information that's being posted, and is looking forward to trying that out on a virtual machine when it comes out. And he can certainly do that, as can anyone else, on February 29th when the consumer preview of Windows 8 comes out. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more to talk about when that happens. So stick around.
Yeah, we used to call it beta.
Yes.
Now it's consumer preview. That's the new terminology. We have to all catch up. But I am reading that there probably will not be a release candidate. So this looks like it's the one version that you get to play with before the final release, which is looking like this fall for sure.
Got an email from Beth asking about the new GoldWave app, which is apparently in the iOS App Store, I believe. And she wants to know if any of us have played with it. I personally have not. Jamie, how about you?
No, I have not, but I would be actually quite interested to know from anyone who has how that is working. So send us an email.
I think there are a couple of audio editing apps for the iPhone, and I know that Patrick Perdue has used one of them. I don't recall which one, but if you have information about any audio editing apps, including GoldWave, drop us a line, resources@serotalk.com.
And this is Patrick Perdue with a response to Beth's question. As far as I know, there is no actual iOS version of GoldWave, and I haven't used GoldWave in almost 12 years now. But I have played around a little bit with one audio editor for iOS called Hokusai. It's Hokusai. And from what I remember of using Goldwave, some of its basic editing functions are kind of similar. Hokusai is free, and it does have in-app purchases that make it a little more powerful. But if all you really need is cut, copy, and paste basic editing functionality, you don't necessarily need those in-app purchases. They add more effects and make it a little bit more interesting, adding things like compressors and reverbs and EQs and filters and all sorts of good stuff. Maybe when I'm a little more familiar with this app, I can actually do a review of it for the Triple Click Home podcast for all things Apple here on SPN. So stay tuned and find out. Oh boy!
Dave from Dublin, Ireland, provides a link to some accessibility features of Sky TV in the UK and Ireland. And I must say, I went to this website and wish that I could access Sky TV. They give really clear instructions on how to enable audio description on your device. Just really well done. I was extremely impressed. And as I say,
well,
I wish I could access the service.
But you wouldn't have Braille on your drink cups. I'm sorry.
Braille on the McDonald's drink cups. That's
They may have us in just about every other way, descriptive video, better websites, and more governance over accessibility. But
and Braille on a lot more stuff.
I can tell my drink cup.
Well, they have Braille on a lot more stuff, just not drink cups. But
Funny. Thank you, Damon, for that. We're going to keep harping.
That's right.
It's the one thing that we have. It's the one thing we have.
But Dave, I appreciate your pointing this out about Sky TV. You're absolutely right in that they should be praised and commended. And I'd like to see more companies doing what they're doing.
And it's a perfect way of when you have dialogues with other companies, if you need examples, because other companies will go, okay, well, who's doing it right? Okay, well, here's a perfect example of a company that really is reaching out to those who they serve. Hello, Comcast. Sorry. Yeah. And making things accessible that you could actually interact with in a very timely fashion, especially since I'm paying you money, Netflix. You know, this is just turning into a rant. I'm going to stop now. but, you know, we thank you for your emails. We thank you for your iReports. And you know what, guys? We also thank you for your iTunes reviews. We have a couple of iTunes reviews up for the Sarah Talk podcast, as well as End of Line and Triple Click, and we certainly appreciate that. Don't forget, if you like the show, one of the quickest ways to help us out is to go in there and rate the podcast or even write a small review.
We have yet another email. I told you this mailbag was really heavy and we had to be careful. This one comes from Bob Hart, who is asking about how to use some sort of earbuds wirelessly with a PackMate. And he mentioned Mike's Bluetooth headset reviews. In that review, Mike discussed the Micus Blue Bridge device that could turn any device, which usually required wired headphones, into something that had Bluetooth capability. So you could plug this device into your PackMate, assuming it has an 1/8-inch jack, which it does. And then what you would do is get a Bluetooth earpiece, and many of them, none of the ones that Mike reviewed do, but many of them just fit over one ear rather than two. And that works for Bob because he wants one ear open to listen to meetings and things like that. So get the Micus Blue Bridge device plus a single-ear Bluetooth headset, and you should be good to go.
We have one final email from another Beth who has some very strong feelings on the importance of Braille in the education of the blind. You know, this is interesting because in our podcast last week in Triple Click Home 4, which you should be hearing very, very shortly, and then in this email that I'm referencing, everyone who is a Braille user who uses it on a regular basis has very strong feelings. There's no one that is just kind of so-so, you know, well, yeah, it's okay if you use Braille, it's okay if you don't. Anyone who's a regular Braille user is extremely adamant that it is very important in the lives of blind individuals, especially blind children, as they're being taught. So I'm glad we've had this discussion. The Triple Click team really spent quite a bit of time discussing this very same issue. It's one of those really hot button topics right now. Again, thank you for sending those emails, resources at sarotalk.com, iReports, the Blab Line 866-997-2522, or thesarotalk.com blog. Leave a comment. Finally, it's time for Roundabout. Google is going to release some heads-up display glasses before the end of the year. But I was a little disappointed as I read this. First of all, the price is going to be between $250 and $600, probably. But it looks like it's not going to be voice control.
Yeah, you're going to control it with your head, which is kind of interesting. Yeah. And when I first saw this, I thought they meant that these were going to be glasses to kind of take the place of a monitor. And I've heard the need for this from several sighted friends and family members, how great it would be to just have a pair of glasses that served as your display for your PC or whatever it is that you're working on. These, however, are at least, they have some of the functionality of a smartphone. You'd be looking at some augmented reality things, of course, from Google and various other stuff. But yeah, you control this by tilting your head.
There are some privacy concerns. You may be being photographed and not know it with these devices.
Yeah, that's not good.
Luckily,
they are talking about it right now, though, rather than after the release and something happens to make it a major priority.
I mean, it's got to start somewhere. It's got to start now. It will have, at some point, some accessibility features for us when they get through the first one or two product revisions. And Google's not any stranger to privacy as far as cameras are concerned. Street View, as you remember, people were upset.
Oh, yes.
Because the cameras were taking pictures of people because they had their bedroom windows open. So you could see them from the street anyway. It was just so happens that the Google car was rolling by when you were coming out of the shower.
So now billions of people can see that instead of just your neighbors.
Yeah, so sorry about that. The future is going to be something like this, as scary as it is. And of course, we say that not having CCTVs, which were closed-circuit televisions that are for security, not for reading large print, the CCTV network in England and the UK is pretty pervasive, and they're used to being on camera all the time. We're not. But in other countries, it is a different philosophy as what can be seen, who can be seen, and when they can be seen. What I kind of think is weird about the head-tilting thing is we're having all these weird, social, awkward things happening now where you go to dinner and people are staring at their navels, but they're not. They're staring at their phones. And
Can I tell you what happened last night? Last night, my wife and I were sitting at dinner in a restaurant, and she looks over at this family of four and thought, oh, they're praying. How nice is that? She looks back over a couple minutes later, and they're still with their heads down. She looked closer, and all four of them were texting on their cell phones.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So family dinner out includes we all ignore each other and text on our phones. There's something really sad about that. But
Veronica Belmont tells the story about how the waiter asked if she and her boyfriend were fighting because they weren't talking and they were looking
both
at their
reading
phones.
Stuff on their phones.
Oh.
Yeah, so I guess the equivalent to this right now, and we'll see it at convention, well, maybe even at CSUN, Ricky, is how many people are going to be using Siri and not realizing what they're saying and how loud they're saying it. We already sort of have that. So for blind individuals, we're going to have the, Siri, can you tell me where the nearest drugstore is? Or something equally embarrassing, you know?
Yes,
where's the bathroom, Siri?
Siri, yeah. Find me a bathroom.
So, I mean, it's going to be – we're not going to be left out of this social awkwardness. I just want people to realize just because sighted people will be tilting their head in odd angles and staring at their navels, we'll have an ability to jump in on this too and be just as equally embarrassing.
Well, actually, though, this could work as an icebreaker because you could hear one person saying, Siri, where's the McDonald's? And another blind person who's just come from that because they asked Siri 2 hours ago, they could say, oh, I can give you directions. And by the way, there's a giant pole on your way. So be careful not to smack into that. So it could actually work as social networking, oddly.
Yeah, just as long as you're not texting odd romantic messages to your loved ones through Siri publicly.
Yes, if you're doing that, you may need to rethink and realize that there's a difference between public and
voice,
private.
Siri.
Yeah.
And if you say, Siri, play Hootie and the Blowfish, it lets me get away. So I appreciate that part. That's actually a public service.
Well, while you're in San Diego, you might want to go to the zoo. And when you go there, you need to go to the guest relations desk and ask for their accessibility guide in Braille. And I think that is a great service, and I'm very pleased that they are offering that.
This comes from a Twitter feed called Access San Diego, which posts information year-round related to accessibility in the city of San Diego. And it's a great resource, especially around conference time for those of you who are attending CSUN. This feed will mention various things about the city that are of interest to you.
This next article asks the question, is Skype a social network? Question, is Skype a social network? You know, I've never thought of it as one, honestly. It does kind of fulfill some of the requirements, some of the same functions as Facebook. We get 30 million people online at any one time. And, you know, why don't we think about it as a social network? One suggested reason is just maybe simply a PR failure on the part of Skype.
That's very possible, because there are a lot of things that we may not necessarily be able to do accessibly, but the public at large can do these things. For example, screen sharing. I don't believe they can do collaborative document writing and that sort of thing yet, but that would be a small thing for Microsoft to integrate.
With Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, come on. Microsoft, you bought this thing. You already have collaboration in other products.
They kind of sort of do that with Link. Link for the enterprise does that, and they've kind of said Skype is for the consumer, but it doesn't mean that they also couldn't leverage that through Facebook Connect, because Microsoft has something like a 5% stake in Facebook. So there's a lot of things that could connect one another. And I don't know if Microsoft's sure what they want to do with Skype just yet.
Yeah, they probably just kind of said, hey, I want this. And I'm not really sure why. We'll figure that out later.
I think it was to keep it out of the hands of competitors. My tinfoil hat thought.
No, actually, I truly do believe that is one of the main reasons for it. But it makes sense for them to expand this a little bit, because for some people who are new to the computer, even Facebook is very confusing, whereas Skype, if somebody initiates the call, all you have to do is click the answer button. You're there talking with your mom, and you can do more than just talk. You can turn on your video sharing. You can even now, again, have screen sharing. So you go to a particular website and show someone how to do something, or you just wanted to point out, hey, look, there's Farmville. Go play it.
Or if you look at it from, say, FaceTime, right? FaceTime is iDevice to iDevice. But Skype eventually will connect to Xbox 360 and Kinect. And you can actually, you know, sit from your living room with your bag of Cheetos and play, Xbox 360. But then turn around to your Kinect and call somebody on a phone, even an iPhone, because it's going to be multi-platform with Skype. So again, I don't think they've completely figured out what they have bought and what they can do yet. I think it's still in the feeling stages. And maybe some of that requires Windows 8 and the Xbox for the Kinect for the PC, which is an SDK now.
In our final story today, smart cows can text owners when the mood strikes. This is actually a pretty good thing for farmers, I think. Some UK researchers are working on this. They're going to equip dairy cows with the same sensor that is used in the Wii controller. They're going to wear a smart collar, the cows are, and detect things like head position. So if a cow gets sick, then the owner will receive a text message. You know, your cattle are quite an investment, quite an expensive investment in many cases. And you need to know if your stock is having a problem. You need to be able to deal with that quickly. So I actually think this is a great thing. Also, if the cow is ready to, shall we say, be romantic with the bull maybe and make other cows,
yes.
calves, then they will know that as well, which I'm a little more curious as to how.
Bovine booty call? That? Is that what you're looking for there, Jamie?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, how will they know that? I don't know how they will know that information.
I have no idea either.
Farm technology is cool, actually. It's crazy. They've got tractors that can run by, like automatically, just like lawnmowers that can actually do that by just knowing the periphery of the yard. You think, you know, the stereotypical farmer, you know, sitting on his porch not doing nothing. But no, there's a lot of technology now. GPS, you can watch the herd via Google Earth. There's a lot
you can track them all and everything. What I kind of wonder about is if there is a head signal for I'm hungry. And if there is,
I was thinking, yeah,
the cow would initially do it subconsciously. You know, it would be kind of like a natural head signal or whatever. But then if they did this particular thing and then they were fed shortly thereafter, would they then be trained and they go, oh, when I do this particular head signal, I get food.
Feeder bar technology.
Yes.
Ah, if I do that again, then this food shows up. Cool. All right, let's do that again. 30 minutes or less. Let's go. Time it. You know, I was talking to you guys a little bit during show prep. You know, there are collars out there that allow you to, watch your animal at home. People set up their webcams so they can make sure kitty's okay, but they're actually cell collars. And by that, I mean there's cell phones in the collar so you can call your animal and talk to them for pet anxiety. And I'm not kidding. That really does exist. Some people do that.
Wow. I don't think my animals would care unless it dispensed food also.
Right.
It was great to hear your voice, but where's my food?
Yeah, where's the food at? You're the big not food who gives me the food.
Yes.
Where's the food at?
I need food.
When are you getting home to give me food?
Yeah. They'll
text
you.
I'm so happy
you.
To see you.
Come on.
They'll text you.
That's it. Glad you're having good time. When do I eat?
I can has cheeseburger, PLZ.
I can has cheeseburger, right?
Uh-huh. Well, I think on that note, we'd probably better bring this to a close, actually. I don't think we can top it in any way, shape, or form. So.
No. Bovine booty call pretty much said it all.
Yeah.
And you wonder where we get the titles, folks.
Yeah. Sometimes they just kind of come to us easy, don't they? Well, be sure and check us out all the week of CSUN. Listen to SPN Radio, follow the Twitter feed, sarotalk.com, Sarotech, Sarospectives, all of our different Twitter feeds will be providing information. The hashtag for CSUN this year is number CSUN12, not 2012, but just the number 12. So you'll definitely want to check that out. Until next time, have a great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Sarotalk. Visit us at www.sarotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@sarotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.